This is episode 53 with Callum Lang.
Are you looking for business school without the BS? Maybe you want to learn leadership from the very best. Learn how to hire, inspire, or fire. Or maybe you want to start or grow your business. Why not check out thrive15.com/nomads? Trainings are broken up into 15-minute episodes that are guaranteed to make you learn in a practical way. You can learn from world-class mentors like Lee Cockrell, David Robinson, and Michael Levine. Check it out. www.thrive15.com/nomads. Or you could just enter thrive15.com and enter the promo code NOMADS, and you should have 30 days of free access of inspired world-class training for a tenth of the cost of business school.
Welcome to the As Told by Nomads podcast, where you'll learn how nomads, third culture kids, entrepreneurs, and leaders all over the world embrace their global identity and use their difference to make a difference. And now, having lived on four different continents, here's your host, Tayo Roxy.
Welcome, everybody. Today I have with me Callum Lang, and he started, built, and has bought and sold half a dozen businesses in a range of industries across two continents. He's the owner of Fitness Buffet, a company delivering employee wellness education in 11 countries, and he's also the director of Entrevote Asia, a company helping executives and business owners to become a key person of influence in their industry. He was recently awarded the Asia Best Employer Outstanding Leadership Award, and he's a mentor and advisor to DBS Business Class, among others. Callum lives in Singapore with his wife and two children. Welcome, Callum.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a pleasure to be on this call.
Well, so to talk to me about yourself and your passions.
That's a broad topic, but in keeping with the sort of focus of your interviews. So I am a third generation kid. I was born in New Zealand, grew up in the UK, okay. And now I've been in Asia for the past 13-14 years. So the New Zealand accent is pretty much gone. It comes out when I'm watching rugby or occasionally after a few drinks. it's an interesting area that you're looking at. And now I've got my own kids who are growing up, and they're even more confused when they get the question, "Where do you come from?" So I empathize with the topic.
It's definitely not the easiest question to answer, because So you had New Zealand, you have English, you live in Singapore. I guess you've been living in all through Asia for the last 12, 13 years, you said?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And so we've got, my daughter has, I've got two daughters, and two little blonde kids that when they're asked where they're born, one of them says Thailand, one of them says Singapore, and that generally gets some blank looks on people's faces.
Why Asia? Why did you decide to move to Asia? What about Asia attracted you?
So, going back to your point on passions, I've always been entrepreneurial. I've always been setting up little businesses and a bit of a business geek. And my first sort of grown-up business was a consultancy in the dot-com boom, building operation centers for telcos in Europe. But even then, so that was back in sort of 98, 99, but there was a lot of, when you looked at the macro business trends, there was a lot of stuff going on in Asia, and it was clear that there was this big shift happening from west to east, that there was a lot of demographic changes that were happening in Asia, and a lot of exciting things happening there. So just from my own personal perspective and wanting to kind of B-ware stuff was happening, I was very keen to move to Asia way back then, which is sort of why when the opportunity came up, we moved over here, like you say, 13 years ago, and originally found ourselves in Thailand. And that was it's a great country. Most people go there for holidays, and it's a fantastic place for holidays. But it was also a great country for me to kind of get my footing in Asia and start to. I built up a few companies, and it's quite a cost of living in Thailand is pretty cheap. So although there are some big cultural differences, and there was a lot to learn, it was quite a forgiving place for me to start and build a few businesses there. And so we were there for 9 years, had a lot of fun, and then one of my companies, Fitness Buffet, really started to take off, and we moved to Singapore 3.5 years ago, just because it was easier to have it headquartered out of Singapore, just because Singapore and Hong Kong tend to be the regional hubs for Asia, so it was just easier to be here, and Singapore is a great place to live and bring up kids, so really enjoying it.
You know, I was talking to one of my friends, she lives in Bali, and she was telling me that Singapore is probably the cleanest city she's ever been to, or, I don't know, she said Singapore, or it's, like, so clean, high-tech and all that, but, I don't know if that's...
Yeah, it's interesting, because I you mentioned in the intro, I do a daily interview with entrepreneurs and leaders around Asia, and... one of the questions we ask them is which is the easiest city to do business in Asia, and Singapore generally is the one that comes up first. It's, you know, it's English language. It's got the English legal system, and just a very, very proactive government that focuses very hard on creating an ecosystem that drives innovation and business success. So, yes, Singapore is definitely, we joke, we call it Asia Light.
Asia Light.
it's a great place to, if you're thinking about trying to get your business to sort of capture some of the huge opportunities in Asia, then Singapore is a good place to kind of get kicked off from.
Right. Well, now I want to touch on two things there. I'm curious as to how you started to adapt to the culture in Asia. When you've got all these New Zealand and British influence, and you're raising a family, you moved there. I was curious as to how you started to connect to people, and I'm also curious as to what the business landscape was like, because you said you've founded a few companies. So I'm just curious as to how you fit in, essentially, or if you are still fitting in, and then how you decided to do business with them, whether there were any barriers to entry, or were there any things you learned that you probably wouldn't be able to do in New Zealand or England?
Yeah, so I mean, I guess there's a bunch of stuff there. I think one of the challenges is always when we talk about Asia, it's such a it's such a vast area, and the different countries have very different cultures. It's kind of like talking about Europe, doing business in Europe. Doing business in England is very different to doing business in Germany or France, for example. So there's that. And if you kind of look on the scale of things, you've got sort of Singapore and Hong Kong, which are very business focused and very ambitious and very driven. You've got Thailand, which is much more relaxed, and Indonesia and Philippines, again, sort of different cultures. I think the interesting thing for someone coming in each of these places, of course, you've got big expats communities, and I think what I've found over the years living in a number of different countries is the more diverse the culture, the more supportive the expat community is to helping newcomers come in. So that was, we certainly found that very useful when we arrived in Thailand. We had a lot of people sort of took us under their arms and under their wings, and so that was great. And then I think kind of what you discover when you're working in different countries and different cultures is it's easy to pick at the things that are different, but there's also so much stuff that is the same. And one of the things that I found when I first got to Thailand and I first set up my businesses, or my first business there, and there were times when I was really struggling with the cultural differences. So one of the things you find, obviously, when growing up, you sort of assume that the way you do stuff is the right way to do stuff. And the more you travel around, the more you realize that not only is it not necessarily the right way to do stuff, it might not be a good way to do stuff. So you have to kind of be open to understanding that. But one of the things that I discovered fairly early on was that the best companies are managing to keep their company culture regardless of the country that they're in. So I remember sort of discovering this when I went for a coffee in Starbucks in Thailand, and at the time I was getting really frustrated with the team that I'd brought on, and yeah, I was really struggling with the different cultural nuances and what were the things that motivated Thai people. And then I walked into this Starbucks, and the level of service in Starbucks in Thailand was exactly the same as every other Starbucks anywhere in the world. They were smiling and they were polite and they followed procedures. And what it really brought home to me was actually the problem wasn't the cultural differences. The problem was that I hadn't developed the internal company culture strong enough to attract and train and retain the best people. So it was a bit it was a bit of an awkward conversation to have with myself, but it was a realization that if companies like Starbucks can manage to pick people up at sort of minimum wage level anywhere in the world, but still maintain a fantastic workplace and great standards anywhere in the world, then clearly there's something to the company culture which can actually supersede the individual country culture. So it's an interesting thing to play around with.
Okay, that's interesting. So you're of the mindset that companies, especially global companies, should keep their company culture, regardless of where they are.
Well, I think what happens, like, you're definitely going to make changes. It's the only way to survive is to be adaptable to the environment you're in. But what I've found is that, and I noticed that we do some bits and pieces of work with Google and other companies like that at the moment, and you see that the culture that they have, the companies with the strong cultures will attract the best people who want to be a part of that culture. Mm. And in every country, you've got ambitious people. In every country, you've got lazy people. And so you want to create a company culture that will attract the best people from the company you're in. And it doesn't mean you're insensitive to the local market. It's very much that you adapt to that, but that you do have something that will attract the best from the local company.
No, I got you. I mean, I hear you. Because, sometimes I think of companies like McDonald's, and, when they go to India, they have to adjust the menu. Other type of companies, just because it's, some of the food might not be part of what it's familiar with the culture. Or like Walmart maybe fails in like a Brazil or something like that. But just, because of just different culture nuances, but it's
totally. So you've got those changes around the product and stuff, but mm-hmm. One of the things that makes McDonald's or has made McDonald's so successful over the years is that they have an incredibly strong company culture.
Right.
And they have incredibly good procedures and processes, so that you can have a 16-year-old running a company, pretty much. And
same process.
Totally. But so that stays like that sort of systemizing everything and their commitment to keeping everything clean and food fast delivery and all of those sort of things remain, even if the products will change slightly or the nuances will change slightly in the cultures, in the countries.
Gotcha, yeah. So it's mainly around the system. I completely agree with that. So this is interesting for me because many people seem to be afraid to start something, you know, just because they don't know exactly how to do it. I know I certainly fell into that trap. But there wasn't really a roadmap for you to follow. So what kept you going? Yeah, you said you felt like it was moving east, you went there, and then I'm just curious as to what kept you going, and if you knew in advance, would you ever not start being an entrepreneur?
Yeah, that's a good question. So there is no real roadmap, I guess. I think I had a, I've always enjoyed the idea of starting my own businesses and building my own thing. So I was keen to do that. I liked the idea of being somewhere where so much change is happening. I mean, one of the reasons that entrepreneurs do well is where they find value differentials. And when you're in a place where there's a lot of change happening very quickly, you find that there's a lot of value differentials. And those only last for so long because the market, the market doesn't like anyone making too much profit. So when somebody discovers a good business model, competition will pile into that. But for the entrepreneur, if you can be in that market while there's a lot of change happening, it's a great, great opportunity. So that was kind of what drew me here and as what keeps me here. Yourself, entrepreneurship is a roller coaster ride. It's ups and downs.
Definitely.
I've been very lucky. With the teams I've built up and the opportunities that have come to me. So, I'm not sure if I would advise myself to do that. If I was advising my younger self, I'm not sure if I would give them the same advice. But that's part of the journey, and it's makes some good stories to share over a beer or two.
No, I definitely agree. And for me, I mean, I fell into entrepreneurship just because I finally got over the fear of myself failing. Just because I just said, if I fail, this is going to be one of the lessons that I'll have to always doing that. And when I was building the media company, it actually took me getting laid off for me to actually say, Ty, you better just, you can either go back to the corporate world where you don't really fit in right now, or you can start something. So it was kind of like the road less traveled with Robert Frost there. So, but that seemed to have made all the difference. And there, it's not, like you said, it's not, there's so many ups and downs, especially when you're bootstrapping or whenever you're looking for funding and things like that. But, the lessons you learn and the rewards that you gain are, I like to say invaluable. So. Okay, so now it's one thing I like about what you're doing when I was looking into what you do is you have such a I was looking at your reading your bio and I was like, I don't know how you do all this. I'm curious as to who your biggest inspirations are and where you draw all this energy from. I mean, because I run a daily platform as well. I know how the content calendar can be a nightmare sometimes when you're thinking, oh my goodness, next week. I was just doing, I was up till 4 a.m. yesterday because I was planning 2 weeks in advance. I was like, I got to find something for the next couple weeks. So I'm wondering if you're doing daily interviews and you're running several companies as well, where you draw inspiration from and who just inspires you?
It's... It's a beast that always needs feeding. Yes. when you start these things. I have spent a lot of probably the last 5, 6, 7 years focusing on systemization and getting, in terms of inspiration, I think Tim Ferriss's book,
4 Hour Week.
yeah, it was a great. I think the thing that I kind of really took out of that was I'd already been using virtual assistants and sort of virtual team members for a while at that point. But I got, after reading his book, I think I became much more effective at breaking down tasks and systemizing them. And so generally now when I take on a project, I figure out how to systemize it and outsource as much of it as possible. So, for example, the daily interviews, I created a template interview. And I have two virtual assistants that basically all day long they're emailing people, they're handling it. The time that it takes me is about an hour a week when I just read 5 or 6 interviews at a time and just approve them and then send them to the our partners that publish them. So actually, although those people have probably got 6 emails back and forth, getting them to the point where the interview is ready to be published, they're not from me. They're from virtual assistants.
Right. That's
my little
right.
secret. A big part of being able to do so much is systemizing it, and getting a good team around you that can help you to do that. And that's not always easy, but over the years, you find the people that you can trust, and I've got a great team now that helps me with the different businesses, and yeah, it's going well.
It all comes down to systems, right? It seems like that's a pattern I'm hearing. And, well, you know, with Tim Ferriss' book, I couldn't agree with you more. I've read everything, the 4-hour body, everything, 4-hour work week, all that. But he thrives on that. When it's this podcast you listen to, and it's putting all these systems in place. And that in itself has sometimes can be a challenge because you're finding the right virtual assistant, finding all that. But that seems to, you know.
Yeah, it's I work with a lot of business owners, and I end up kind of sharing a lot of how I do it with them on that. I think that the hardest thing is actually sitting down and breaking down the task to start with. It's you know that it's a task that you can do in 10 minutes, but if you're going to break it down and you're going to find virtual assistants and everything, like you're probably going to lose half a day kind of doing that. But once you've done it, and once you've kind of, and generally what I do is I'll put a task out to about 3 or 4 different virtual assistants just for a week or so, and see which ones deal with it well and which ones are responsive. And those are the ones I stick with. It's a learning process, and it takes a lot of time up front. But if you can if you invest that time up front, then the thing can run pretty much with minimal oversight from yourself. Of course, it doesn't always work.
But no, that seems to no. I mean, yeah, but nothing's foolproof. So it's. Is there like a resource that you can recommend to people to use for?
I've used Elance for years and years, sort of 7 or 8 years. It did one of those horrible things when it flashes up how much money you've spent on Elance in the last 7 years, and I kind of freaked out. But I use it for everything. When I was building Fitness Buffet, we grew to the first 6 countries and a US $10 million valuation before I'd hired my first full-time staff. But I had, I think, at one point I had about 40 people working on Fitness Buffet around the world, all through Elance.
That's great.
That I'd met that before, but that were able to make it happen. So
yeah.
it's a great tool.
That's good. Yeah, and then they partner up with Odesk soon, or was that?
Yeah, so they merged with Odesk, and I think they're sort of slowly bringing the two services together. But, I mean, it's sort of, you know, it's just a great platform to find people, and again, I sort of you go through all of the mistakes when you're learning this. When I was first there, I was sort of blown away by how cheap some people are. Now I don't ever go for the cheap ones. I go for the ones that have got lots and lots of five-star ratings. That's sort of my philosophy now, is that it's not my job to break in the new people. I'll let somebody else do that. I only want to work with people that have already, you know, been on the platform for a couple of years, know how to do the work, know how to report, know how to bill. And you know, you might pay a little bit more for that, but actually, in terms of the job that's getting done, I'm more than happy to do that.
Yeah, that's good. You know, it's approval by committee there. So, I'm going to get into some more fun questions soon. So, but I'm really fascinated by your background, and I just wanted to really talk about some of the business aspects, because I know a lot of people that listen to this are always keen on just different ways they can get into entrepreneurship in different parts of the world. So, the thing with starting a business sometimes we think we know where it should go. But have you found many times that the market finds you? I mean, you've been in so many businesses. I don't know if you actually predicted where the market was going, or did you find that? I know you went to Asia on purpose, but did you find that home? I just fell into that.
I make lots of predictions, and I don't think any of them have ever worked out. I have a terrible track record in that respect. What I find is you know, you set up your kind of the vision of where you want to go, and you hopefully inspire other people into that vision, but invariably the market has other ideas, the customers have other ideas, and so you end up taking it a different way. I mean, one of the things I think I've definitely learned over the years, and I'm a painfully slow learner, but rather than trying to, one of my kind of rules now is that I don't invest in my own ideas, and the sort of theory behind that is that generally when I have a great idea for a new product or a new business, is that I get very excited and I think it's the bee's knees. But what I used to do was I would then go out and I'd look for other people to reconfirm that what a great idea that was, and I was going to be rich and all of those good things. And then I would sink tons of time or money into building the product before I took it out to market and tried to sell it. And that's about the worst thing you can do as an entrepreneur. So now my philosophy is pretty simple, is if I can't pre-sell the product before I've created it, or I can't pre-sell investment in the company before I've formed it, then I'm not going to put any of my own money into it, because as much as I think my idea is a genius, it turns out the market rarely agrees. So yeah, no, I'm very much market driven now, way more than I used to be, and that does that makes life a lot easier. Advice that I give any entrepreneurs these days is see what you can pre-sell or get investment for before you actually go and invest the time and money in building it yourself.
Love it. I couldn't agree with you more. So, fun questions. Now, are you a sports guy?
Yeah.
What are your favorite sports?
So I play five-a-side soccer every weekend, bit of touch rugby, watch rugby as well.
Okay, well, the reason I'm asking is, what's your favorite football soccer team?
Don't make me say that on air.
This could be a make or break moment right here. Do you follow the
premise? So look, there's only going to be about half a dozen of your listeners who have actually heard of them. Sunderland AFC in the northeast of England. It's a painful team to be a fan of. But I used to, many, many years ago, I used to work at Roker Park, which was their old stadium. I used
to sell
match day tickets. And it was one of those jobs that was, there was no pay. And you got, I think I got 10 pence per ticket that I sold, but I got in to see the game for free.
So
I sort of became by default.
Well,
it's not a fun pastime being
I can tell you I'm a huge Manchester United fan. I know. The eyes cue and the eye rolls, I know. And they're actually playing Liverpool now. So it's the biggest. And we're fighting for that third place because I can't believe Arsenal jumped us, but that's another day. But no, I was just curious because for me, sports is big, and that was one of the ways that I connected. I've lived in Vietnam. I lived in that area for a little bit before, and one of the ways I was connecting with other people was always through sports. And then we would always ask what the favorite team was, or we would play intramural sports. And for me, you know, tennis, basketball, soccer. Or three of the biggest things. And moving to America, I had to learn, you know, some of the nuances with football, the other football, the one that uses the hands.
Because anywhere in the world, if you get into a taxi and say you're a Man United fan, you'll start a conversation.
Yeah. It's either good or bad. You're like, what are you doing? But I was curious. So what about favorite countries? Favorite country you actually have lived in? I know you've lived a lot in Asia, but which country has your heart?
That's a difficult one. I lived in the first business I set up was in Amsterdam in Holland, and I absolutely love Amsterdam. It's my favorite city in the world, except that it's just so cold and wet the whole time. And now I've been in the tropics for 13 years. I don't think I could ever live in a cold place again. I'm definitely like the warm weather. So, I love being in Singapore right now. It's a great business environment. It's clean, it's safe, it's efficient, and you know, you're only a couple of hours flight from half a dozen different countries around the region. So, it's definitely a good place to be.
You know, New York City is my favorite city in the world. I moved here on purpose. But this past couple of years, the winters have been brutal. I mean, we are in March right now, and it snowed on Friday. And I've been traveling back and forth to the conferences. I was in Austin, and then I was in D.C., and then the contrast in weather, I was just saying to myself, this is too cold for me. It's just much like you, like Amsterdam is one of your favorite city. New York City is there, but sometimes I just wish I could transplant some of this weather here.
Yeah.
And like, my goodness. Favorite food, which country has the best food?
Thailand.
Oh, Thailand. Gotcha. No, yeah, Thailand.
No question.
Better than Japanese food? Better than...
Thai food's fantastic.
So you like spicy food then?
I like spicy food.
Oh, yeah. Me too. We should have a spicy eating competition.
Yeah, I'll play that game. it was fantastic, and it was just on every street corner you got these little stalls that just cook up this fresh food in front of you. It was love it.
All right, and then country with the best music.
Best music, probably. I guess probably back in the UK from the old DJs and rave culture from my youth. That was good music. Although Holland had some good dance music as well. So,
yeah. So you're a big dance guy.
Yeah. Back in the day.
All right. Now, a UID, we like to say, use your difference to make a difference. That's the premise of the company. And I'm curious, Callum, as to how you use your difference to make a difference.
One of my mentors, and a guy I work very closely with is a guy called Paul Dunn, who's an amazing gentleman, is the chairman of an organization called Buy One, Give One. And we work with them on a lot of projects, and it's the premise is that when you buy something, so you go to a restaurant, you buy a meal, that restaurant will make a donation through Buy One, Give One, and they will buy a meal for a child in a developing country. We do things like when people come to our events, they buy a ticket for the event, and we give a family in a developing country clean water for a year as a result of that through Buy One, Give One. So, it's a project that I'm pretty passionate about, and Paul Dunn's been a big inspiration and mentor to me in that kind of making a difference area. So it's pretty cool.
Good. No, I love companies that get that model right, especially like Tom's Shoes and
Want to get one. Same thing. Yeah. And it's very tangible. It's like, you know, the sort of we'll give 10% to charity thing just doesn't really mean much, but when it's, hey, look, you've bought a meal and that's actually contributed a meal to somebody else, it's very tangible and very real. So, yeah, it's clever.
No, couldn't agree with you more. All right, but before we go, do you have any last words? Sage words of advice to either your young self, you know, the 13-year-old stud, or or to people like us out there who are millennials and are globally minded and just, you know, trying to make an impact in the world, whether it's through entrepreneurship or
global. Yeah, so look, I mean, I would just say, look, if you're not doing stuff in Asia, if Asia's not on your radar yet, you should definitely be looking at it. It's the opportunities out here are just immense, just the sheer volume of people and the trends that are happening, and it's, you know, it's so easy now to be a what we call a global small business, where you can have stuff happening all around the world. And I'm happy to kind of send a link over for your show notes, but I put out every 6 months, I put out a mashup of trends and opportunities that are happening in Asia. So, your listeners can have a look at that, and yeah, connect with me on Twitter, or if you're out this way, definitely look me up.
Yeah, I just connected you on Twitter too, so
sure.
We're getting that. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for spending the time with me. This has been a pleasure, and I look forward to having this out soon.
Yeah, no, pleasure, Theo, and I'll let you get back to the Manchester United game now.
You've just been listening to the As Told by Nomads podcast. For more ways to use your difference to make a difference, as well as for show notes, head over to www.uydmag.com. Till next time, go out and make an impact in your world.